Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up because I have an important topic. It's on my mind. It should be on your mind. If it's not, it should be. My name is Rose Colombo. I am the Rose and a crusader for justice for many, many years. And I've proposed laws, and they've been implemented by lawmakers over the years. And hopefully it's made the world a little better place. But it appears that laws are meant to be broken, changed, and ignored, or rewritten. And so we never know which laws are going to violate next. Well, one of the laws, in my opinion, is a constitutional law, which is immoral and unethical, and it has to do with abortions. And not only abortions, but late-term abortions, and also infanticide, and forcing doctors and nurses to perform abortions against their conscience, against their religion, against their morals, their principles, their values, and depopulate the nation of future natural-born Americans as they flood the nation with third-world unidentified foreigners, a majority of males, and also females who are pregnant, and they're allowed to have anchor babies. And so we have a problem because third-world countries overpopulate for domination, and that's exactly what Obama and Holder and the Muslim Brotherhood stated and written strategic goals is to overpopulate using that as a means for domination over Western civilization. And as we know, Obama and Biden opened the borders along with Holder and Jared, who was glued to his side, and was born in Iran, and his father was friends of Bill Ayers, and Bill Ayers is a domestic terrorist who was acquitted while his wife went to jail for domestic terrorism. So there you have it in a nutshell. So why do they want to depopulate the natural-born Americans and, in my opinion, violate the Constitution of the United States of America? That guarantees and requires that we protect the life of all human beings, unborn or born. So if we don't have enough Americans born in this country, then we will be no longer the United States of America, because they, as I said, are flooding the nation with third world unidentified foreigners who overpopulate in their countries, and they don't get abortions and they don't take abortion pills. So the point is they will make the Europeans and who are natural born Americans along with white Americans and Americans who are European ethnicity, Canadian ethnicity, the minority in Western civilization. So do you believe that babies should be killed, unborn or late term, when they're just ready to come out of the mother's womb? Do you believe that they should kill babies after they're born and left isolated on a table or in a closet with no touching, no love, no human touch, no feeding, and just let them die by eugenics? Because they do that in the hospitals and in the nursing homes, because it's inserted into Obamacare, secretly inserted, it wasn't disclosed, that worldwide mandated taxpayer-funded abortions, paid by you, the taxpayer, is to be a worldwide program, not just a program enacted in America, but worldwide. And you're required to pay for abortions around the world to kill other people's babies legally, because the U.S. justice has said it was legal. So there you have it. Depends on how you look at murder, I guess. Someone who accidentally runs over someone, I guess, could be charged with murder, even if it was an accident, depending on the prosecutor. So someone who shoots a pregnant woman could go to jail for a double murder, depending on the prosecutor. A woman who leaves her baby on a doorstep or in a trash can and the baby's found can be arrested and prosecuted, depending on the prosecutor. So it all depends on how you look at the word murder. So I guess you could look it up in the law books, but I think we know what murder happens to be. So a lot of people say, especially on the left, that we need to depopulate the natural-born Americans because the mother just doesn't want to have the baby. And instead of just saying no to the guy or using condoms or contraceptives or taking the pill, they go ahead and have their fun and then decide that they don't want this baby, their son or their daughter. And so we've been indoctrinated into the programs by the New World Order that life is meaningless and abortion is no big deal. So just do your thing, and then if you get pregnant, just take a pill or get an abortion, so that the scientists and the doctors and the highest bidders can buy the body parts of the babies who are torn apart for profit. So babies are human commodities for human capital for the rich. Oh, yeah, I guess that's the way it is. And so in the past, Americans were a moral nation. We believed in the conscience of the nation. We believed in God. We believed in the sanctity of life and the sanctity of motherhood and upholding the Constitution, which protects life. It appears that most on the left do not believe in traditional marriage any longer. They don't believe in the traditional family. They don't believe in procreation and giving birth to babies, because there's just too many people on the planet. So we need to remove about 90% of the population, according to billionaires and multimillionaires, to save the planet. But who are you saving the planet for if they're depopulating the planet? That is a question you should ask yourself. They have become the judge, the jury, and the executioner of human beings during pregnancy, at birth, and after birth. So that saline salt that they inject in the babies actually burns their skin, and the babies feel that, and they are in pain for a long time, and then they rip their little body parts for sale very carefully, I assume, so they can get the highest price for those body parts and the blood and the tissue and the stem cells to go into the vaccines and maybe into even artificial sweeteners, so forth. I know in China they actually cook the fetuses, and they in soups, and they ate the fetuses, and they believe that the firstborn, who is, and if it's a son, is the most valuable, is a delicacy. And they believe that this keeps, everybody has their own thing. And in China, they also mandated abortions for any female who was pregnant with a female baby. And they aborted about 40 million female babies. And they monitored these pregnancies, these women who were pregnant, and they also monitored female menstrual cycles, believe it or not. So that's pretty tyrannical. And so the women didn't have any choice but to abort their baby or else be punished. And they found out after 25 years that there weren't enough females of marrying age to marry the young males of marrying age. So that turned out to be a problem for China. And so today, I wanted to read to you what Ronald Reagan wrote in Abortion and the Conscience of the Nation, at least in part. But first, I wanted to show you how it is. This book was written in about 1984, the Orwellian year, and how it plays in today's world with Joe Biden as president of the United States and the Democrats in charge of our nation. Pirates Cove wrote, LGB administration plans to end the rule of law, allowing doctors and nurses to not perform abortions. President Joe Biden's administration plans to rescind a rule devised under his predecessor, Donald Trump, that was intended to make it easier for healthcare providers, including doctors and nurses, to avoid performing abortions or other medical services on religious or moral grounds, Politico reported on that on Tuesday. The United States Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, in 2018 unveiled what it called the Conscience Rule, but it never took effect due to litigation. States including California and New York and abortion providers filed suit to challenge it, leading a federal court to block the measure in 2019. The rule enabled the federal government to punish hospitals, clinics, universities, and other healthcare providers that stopped healthcare workers from doing what their conscience dictated and refusing to carry out certain procedures. Trump's HHS said the rule fulfilled his promise to promote and protect the fundamental and unalienable rights of conscience and religious liberty. Religious conservatives were a key constituency for Trump. Either way, how many abortions are performed in hospitals? Well, I think that the last count was that we have snuffed out 70 million future natural-born Americans who aren't with us today to fight against this liberal, progressive, communist-style depopulation program. About the only number I can find was that Washington Post piece, which says about 4% are performed in the hospitals. Not many where a medical worker could be forced to take part. What else could be affected? Some states and municipalities argue that the rule could undermine their ability to provide effective health care and upend their efforts to accommodate workers' beliefs. Critics also have said the rule could deprive gay and transgender and other patients of needed health care because some providers, citing religious beliefs, might deem them less worthy of treatment. Ah, oh, there it is. Would health care workers, even very religious ones, deny the type of medical care that hospitals and emergency clinics give to them? How about regular doctors who can pick and choose who their clients are? I'm not sure the Trump rule was rescinding of the rule, which is expected to be by the end of April. By the Let's Go Brandon administration will change much of anything. It's the optics of the unhinged Democrat Party base of getting rid of an orange man bad rule, exciting them about the potential to expand abortion on demand. Secondarily, making sure the gender confused may not be turned away, which they usually wouldn't, but in liberal world, everything is the worst. Well, isn't that strange that, let's see, America's 240 years old, and since 2019, people decided that children are confused about their gender ID. And even though the doctor and the nurses and the parents signed a birth certificate stating whether the baby was a boy or a girl by witnesses, and the doctor signed off on it, who should know better? Who would know better that they had a boy or a girl? We didn't have this gender ID issue until they decided to come out from the woodwork and start pushing their depopulation program, because same-sex, transgenders, transhumans, and abortions and abortion pills and wars are all depopulation programs. So they're on a roll. New World Order, World Economic Forum, secret societies. C. Everett Koop, K-O-O-P, he was a doctor, and he wrote the slide to Auschwitz. In July, the City Council of Cambridge, Massachusetts, voted to petition Harvard University to temporarily halt the construction of a $500,000 laboratory for specialized genetics research. Intervention of the town hall in the affairs of the university was not just the hysterical reaction of ignorant people to the misunderstood pursuits of a scientific faculty. Rather, it had been initiated and pushed by distinguished scholars on the Harvard faculty. These individuals were deeply concerned with the newly acquired power in biology to alter the genes of living organisms and create new hybrids of animals and plants and of viruses, some of them potentially dangerous. Well, the reason I wanted to read this to you is because this book was written about 1984, the Orwellian year, and Dr. Fauci was director of the NIH. His wife also works in a key position of the NIH, which, in my opinion, is nepotism. And Dr. Fauci alone, even without his wife's salary and pension and benefits, earns more money than the President of the United States of America. How did that happen, and why did it happen? What great things did Dr. Fauci do with the HIV/AIDS? He has patents, which are worth a lot of money. It is the custom of men to be concerned about those things of which they know little at present, but where the potential seems to be a threat to all of mankind, says Dr. C. Everett Koop. This was true of the first atomic bomb, of its successor, the hydrogen bomb, of all the weaponry to deliver thermonuclear warfare, of biological warfare, and of nerve gas. There are even environmentalists who are deeply concerned over the destruction of the ozone by aerosol cans. Yet, each of these potential dangers to mankind is theoretically, if not practically, controllable. I would like to address you today on another potentially destructive force against mankind, which, because of the nature of human beings, may not be controllable until it has inexorably pursued its path of destruction and has come to weigh upon the conscience of so many people that, like a Vietnam War, it must grind to a halt. I am speaking of the growing disregard for life itself. I am speaking of what was called in a more moral or perhaps a more religious generation, the sanctity of human life. Given the conflicting concerns of our generation, the specter of famine raised by those primarily concerned about population control due to financial chaos, for the whole world raised by economic pundits, the intrusion of violence as an accepted thing into our culture, and declining morality in all the affairs of man, it is quite possible that when the inevitable swing of the pendulum takes place, and life once again becomes precious, it might be too late to stop the slide that will ultimately herself herald the decline and demise of our civilization. And I also want to mention here that abortion is a violent crime. It's a violent crime against a baby. What if that happened to you while you're in your mother's womb? What if your skin was burning, abortionists was tearing your little limbs apart to sell to the highest bidder? The book says, Dr. C. Everett Koop, I am nearing the end of my 31st year in the actual practice of pediatric surgery, longer, I think, than anyone in the room today. I have had the unusual advantage of growing up with my specialty. It has been for me to be an extremely satisfying career. One of the most satisfying aspects has been my participation in the rehabilitation of youngsters who were born with congenital anomalies incompatible with life, but nevertheless amenable to surgical correction. The surgical correction might have been by a dramatic one-stroke procedure, or it may have required years of time and effort, plus further operations to get the best possible result. At times, the best possible result was far from perfect. Yet, I have a sense of satisfaction in my career, best indicated perhaps by the fact that no family has ever come to me and said, "Why did you work so hard to save the life of my child?" And no grown child has ever come back to ask me why either. On the other hand, in a recent study that I did on 25 families, all of whom had a child with an imperforate anus operation operated upon by me in the period 25 to 15 years ago, almost every family referred to the experience of raising the defective youngster as a positive one. A few were neutral, none were negative. Some siblings felt that they had not had some of the advantages that they might have had if their brother or sister had been normal. Yet, on balance, the conclusion from these 25 families, whom we studied quite extensively, was that many of them were better families than they would have been without the necessity of facing the adversity produced by the problems of the imperfect child. And what is interesting is that no human being is perfect. No mind is perfect. We could call people genius, but how many geniuses have failed in what they were trying to do, like Edison, who failed 1,999 times and said that that's what caused him to be successful, learning from his mistakes. Dr. Cooper says, I do not feel that I am over the hill, but with mandatory retirement less than 5 years away, it does behoove me to look at the end of my career. As I do it, it saddens me, but it frightens me too when I see the trends in our society and recognize the acquiescence, if not the leadership, of the medical profession down a path which in my judgment leads to destruction. Well, we are on that path. And we are distancing and lining up with our mask. And when we're allowed to go outside and breathe fresh air and exhale carbon monoxide by our masters now, who have granted themselves such authority, totalitarian, authoritarian dictates, outside of their job duties, outside of their pay grade, and outside of the U.S. Constitution. But nonetheless, that's what they've been doing to cover up their crimes against humanity. Anyway, Dr. Cooper says, Dr. Koop, K-O-O-P, in January of 1973, the United States Supreme Court declared that a new right existed in the Constitution, namely, the right of a woman to have an abortion on demand. I am not here today to argue the pros and cons of the abortion question, but in a paper I presented in 1973, I predicted 10 consequences of the Supreme Court's decision on abortion that would remarkably, deleteriously affect the society in which we live. All 10 of these prophetic statements have found realization in historical fact. Without going into all details, I express the concern that abortion of somewhere between 1 million and 2 million unborn babies a year would lead to such a cheapening of human life that infanticide would not be far behind. Well, this book was written long ago, decades ago, and they knew and they were warning the dangers of what Hitler did to humanity in World War II is now on the doorstep of Western civilization and in the greatest nation on earth, the United States of America, one nation under God, whose foundation was built upon and developed on a Christian foundation of principles and values and morals. Not that everyone follows them, but that is the basis for our civilization. And our laws are rooted in the Constitution. Constitutional laws and all federal and state laws are written and rooted from the Bible and the Ten Commandments, because our framers and our ancestors were God-fearing, God-loving Americans. Not that people didn't sin or commit crimes, but that was the majority and how we tried to create a civilized nation. And the family tradition, the family unit, traditional family is the foundation of a civilized nation. So with, So I am frequently told by people who have never had the experience of working with children who are being rehabilitated into our society, did the correction of a congenital defect, that infants with such a defect should be allowed to die or even encouraged to die because these lives could obviously be nothing but unhappy and miserable. Yet it has been my constant experience that disability and unhappiness do not necessarily go together. Some of the most unhappy children whom I have known have all of the physical and mental faculties. And on the other hand, some of the happiest youngsters have borne burdens, which I myself would find very difficult to bear. Our obligation in such circumstances is to find alternatives for the problems our patients face. I don't consider death an acceptable alternative. With our technology and creativity, we are merely at the beginning of what we can do educationally and in the field of leisure activities for such youngsters. And who knows what happiness is for another person? What about the rewards and satisfactions in life to those who work with and succeed in the rehabilitation of these other than perfect children? Stronger character, compassion, deeper understanding of one's burdens and another's burdens, creativity, and deeper family bonds all can and do result from the so-called social burdens of raising a child with a congenital defect, repaired but less than perfect. And that is happening today as well. The Democrats and have suggested that we euthanize veterans who are in hospitals. We euthanize the elderly because the grandparents, and even if you're senior elder parent, that you are just a financial burden to the planet. your time should be up. And it was Rahm Emanuel's brother, who's a doctor, who stated that people should not live past, I believe it was, don't quote me, but I believe it was around 72 years old. I think that's so that they don't have to pay in, out the Social Security that they ripped off for decades, or Medicare or Medi-Cal. And they're looking to use advanced technology and lasers and other probably medical advancements to heal people and rejuvenate people in the future, so they don't really need to be burdened with seniors and veterans and the elderly, who are taking up too much space on the planet, according to them. Or the, in fact, they've even suggested children with autism and millions of Americans whose children were healthy and then ended up with autism after being excessively jabbed with chemicals were ignored by the United States Senate when they had the hearings, and still are today. It's no different than the COVID jabs, where insurance companies and morticians have stated they've noticed 40% increase in deaths, and they've never seen so many young people dying from heart attacks. And after the jabs were rolled out in January of 2021, and there's a more than 1,000% increase in the military that's being squashed or quashed. So there you have it, people who like the idea of depopulating the planet. Do they ever realize that one day they'll be depopulated because they've reached a certain age, or maybe they become sick, or maybe they're in an accident and end up in a hospital or in their home, heaven forbid, or that their parents or their loved ones could be on the chopping block? I don't think they think. So Dr. Koop says, I have frequently said facetiously that nothing makes a woman out of a girl quicker than a colostomy in her child, but it is true. When from the materialistic point of view in life seems to be without meaning, it can, from the spiritual point of view, be extremely useful. Such a life might, for example, provide a source of courage in the manner in which the stress caused by disease and its treatment accepted. There is also no doubt that the value placed upon the patient by his associates as one who is respected and honored and loved is a source of inspiration to all who see it and a spiritual blessing to many. American opinion is rapidly moving toward the position where parents who have an abnormal child may be considered responsible. This is the observation of Dr. James Sorensen, Associate Professor of Socio-Medical Sciences at Boston University, who spoke at a symposium, Prenatal Diagnosis and Its Impact on Society. Now, if I take a strong stand against a statement like Dr. Sorensen's, I am told that I'm trying to legislate my morality for other people. I think, on the contrary, those who agree with Dr. Sorensen's statement are trying to legislate the morality on our society. Parents who might give remarkable love and devotion to an abnormal child are put on the position of feeling they must conform to Dr. Sorensen's morality, or lack of it, for the good of society, rather than for the good of their own child. In the book Ideals of Life, Millard Everett writes, no child should be admitted into the society of the living who would be certain to suffer any social handicap, for example, any physical or mental defect that would prevent marriage or would make others tolerate his company only from the sense of mercy. This really sounds like Hitler. Dehumanization is one of the ideals of life. Then we reach the utopia planned by Mr. Everett. Life will be ideal indeed. his reference to marriage, I cannot help but consider, because I am convinced that the backbone of our remarkable nursing profession and that of our pediatric care and pediatric social service are to be found in the many unmarried women who devote themselves selflessly to the care of patients. I cannot believe that all of these fine women chose not to be married merely to take care of patients. Dr. Koop says, it would follow then that there might have been some social handicap, to use the words of Millard Everett, that might have prevented marriage. If the social handicap existed then, the social handicap must exist today. How long will it be before the Millard Everetts of our society decide that those with this social handicap, whatever it might be eliminated also? Well, I think we're at that point now. Lord Cohen of Birkenhead, speaking of the possibility of euthanasia for children in Great Britain who were mentally defective or epileptic, said, no doctor could subscribe to this view who has seen the love and devotion which bring out all that is the best in men and lavished on such a child. J. Engelbert Dumphy, in the annual oration before the Massachusetts Medical Society in 1976, had this to say. We cannot destroy life. We cannot regard the hydrophilic child as a non-person and accept the responsibility for disposing of it like a sick animal. If there are those in the society who think this step would be good, let them work for a totalitarian form of government. We're beginning with the infirm and incompetent and ending with the intellectually dissident. Non-persons are disposed of day and night by those in power. Well, that's what the government does. They dispose of people who they believe are disposable, in many cases, over the history of the United States as well as the history of the world since the beginning of time. There are those people who believe they are the chosen ones of a specific bloodline who deserve to live, about 10% of the population of the world, and everyone else is disposable or discardable, as I had written in my award-winning book, Fight Back Legal Abuse, published in 2010. Dumphy goes on to say, history shows clearly the frighteningly short steps from the living will to death control, to thought control, and finally to the systemic elimination of all but those selected for slavery or to make up the master race. We physicians must take care that support of an innocent but quite unnecessary living will does not pave the way for us to be the executioners while the decisions for death are made by a panel of objective experts or by Big Brother himself. The year of 1984 is not far away. Well, under Obamacare, they didn't disclose that they included death panels. And when I informed talk show hosts on ABC radio and other stations around the country, they hung up on me. They said that that wasn't true and that no one should listen to me. Well, that, of course, is a false statement by them because it was true. It also includes early end-of-life counseling for the people they believe are disposable or discardable and just wasting space and time and money on this planet. Bill Gates said that they will plunge a genetically engineered organism into the veins of every child on this planet and that you have no choice. And then Klaus Schwab said, you will own nothing and you will be happy. These are just people who ended up with a lot of money, and apparently they believe that their money can be used to rid the world of all these deplorable, ignorant, small-minded, easily tricked, easily fooled Americans and all of the other populations around the planet, except for those that they are chipping to become their slaves or injecting to be hooked up to the internet as their slaves and mindless zombies. Dr. Dunphy was speaking of adults dying of terminal cancer, yet his thinking can be extrapolated to the imperfect child with frightening consequences. I'm going to get a sip of tea here, if you don't mind. And let's see here. Let me go back over here. All righty. Let's see how much time I have. Not much. Let's see here. In the Forshaw lecture given by Robert B. Zachary on July 9, 1976, in Sheffield, England, he said, "I accept that the advice given by other doctors may well be different from that which I myself give, and although I would strongly support their right to have a different view, they should be expected to state the fundamental principles on which their criteria are based." Zachary went on to state, "I believe that our patients, no matter how young or small they are, should receive the same consideration and expert help that would be considered normal in an adult. Just because he is small, just because he cannot speak for himself, this is no excuse to regard him as expendable any more than we would do so on account of race or creed or color or poverty. Nor do I think we ought to be swayed by an argument that the parents have less to lose because he is small and newborn and has not yet established a close relationship with them, or indeed, because the infant himself does not know what he is losing by missing out on life. Oh, he knows because he fought of other sperm to breed with the egg and won his right to life. And if they weren't alive, the sperm, then they would not be swimming to find a spot to breed. And so if the baby wasn't a human being, including the fetus, and it wasn't alive, then it wouldn't need to be killed. Anything that is not breathing or anything that is not alive does not need to be killed. So how does the U.S. justify that one? So he goes on to say, let's see here. "There are some ways in which modern society cares greatly about those who are less well off, the poor, the sick, and the handicapped, but it seems to me that the newborn babies are often given less than justice. Our primary concern must be the well-being of the patient, the neonate, as far as it is in our power to achieve it. In his battle at the beginning of life, it could well be that his main defense will be in the hands of pediatric and neonatal surgeons. Has not Zachary enunciated the whole raison d'etre of the specialty of pediatric surgery? On the occasion of the 100th anniversary of the Children's Hospital in Sheffield in July of 1976, Mr. Peter Rickham of Zurich presented a paper entitled, The Swing of the Pendulum. Although he concerned himself largely with the problems of meningomyelocele, a birth defect where the spinal cord is exposed, leading to neurological sequelae, some correctable and some not,
an ethical problem of greater proportion in the British Isles than here, he did talk to some degree on medical ethics in reference to the neonate. In discussing his own interviews with theologians of diverse religious convictions, this is what he had to say. Having another sip of tea. They all doubt the validity of the basis of the present argument for selection of only the least handicapped patients for survival. The hope that selection will reduce a minimum of the coverall suffering of these patients and their families is a well-meant but somewhat naive wish. How many normal newborn infants will live happily ever after, especially in our present time? It may be argued that by not selecting, we artificially increase the number of people with an unhappy future. But can we be sure of this in any given case? After all, we as doctors deal with single individual patients and not with statistical possibilities. It has also been pointed out to me, said Rickham, that even a child with a grave physical and mental handicap can experience emotions such as happiness, fright, gratitude, and love, and then that it may be therefore, in fact, a rewarding task to look at them. It has been further argued that, strictly speaking, selection implies a limitation of resources because, with an optimum of resources and care, a great deal can be done for these children and their families. In underdeveloped countries, these resources do not exist. But in developed countries, where such enormous sums are spent by governments on purposes which are of very doubtful benefit to humanity at large, the destruction of resources is a debatable subject. Finally, it can be argued that if selection is practiced, it may not be necessarily the fittest on whom the greatest effort should be expended. Well, the truth is that we are at a very dangerous point in ignoring the United States Constitution, ignoring the Bible, the Ten Commandments, God, ignoring our Christian foundation, and ignoring the sanctity of life and motherhood, and ignoring traditional family, because God ordered you to procreate, and that was the basis for one man and one woman to marry, to fill the earth with sovereign nations. And you cannot have sovereign nations if there are no babies being born and there are not enough children growing up to take control over their governments and businesses and so forth and defend, protect, and preserve their sovereign nations and their borders. But we have natural-born Americans who care less about our borders, who care less about the Constitution of the United States, who care less about their sworn oath, who care less about the Ten Commandments and the Bible, who care less about the American people. So, he goes on to say, let's see. Duff and Campbell, in their paper on moral and ethical dilemmas in the special care nursery, make this statement: that survivors of these neonatal intensive care units may be healthy and their parents grateful, but some infants continue to suffer from such conditions as chronic cardiopulmonary disease, short bowel syndrome, or various manifestations of brain damage. Others are severely handicapped by a myriad of congenital malformations that in previous times would have resulted in early death. First of all, it is not necessarily true that the myriad of congenital malformations of previous times would now result in early death. Many patients who have lesions that appear to be lethal can have those lesions corrected, and although they may not be pristine in their final form, they are functional human beings, loved and loving and productive. If indeed we decide that a child with a chronic cardiopulmonary disease or short bowel syndrome or various manifestations of brain damage should be permitted to die by lack of feeding, to prevent the next step, which takes the adult with chronic cardiopulmonary disease who may be much more of a burden to his family than that child is, or the individual who may not have a short bowel syndrome, but who has ulcerative colitis, and in addition to his physical manifestations, has many psychiatric problems as well, or the individual who has brain damage. Do we kill all people with neurological deficit after an automobile accident? Well, what's really interesting is because we are at a point where, as I stated before, they are looking at worldwide abortions paid by the United States taxpayers. They are inserted into Obamacare, which is why the Democrats don't want it overturned. And as you know, worldwide abortions is a depopulation program of humanity and sovereign nations, the end of sovereign nations. In fact, Romania's birth rate is so low that it could be made extinct in the near future along with 5 other countries. So there's many ways they're depopulating this planet by changing your little boys into girls and girls into boys and talking them into being chipped as a cyborg or a mindless zombie controlled, and a transhuman who is neither male or female and can't procreate. Unlicensed experimental jabs. So this is where we're at. Very, very few parents of their own volition come to a physician and say, my baby has a life not worthy to be lived. Any physician in the tremendously emotional circumstances surrounding the birth of a baby with any kind of a defect can, by innuendo, let alone advice, prepare that family to make the decision that that physician wants them to make. I do not consider this to be informed consent. Well, that reminds me of the FDA regulation when it comes to trials on prescription drugs and vaccinations. Their policy prior to 2019, which they've been changing everything since 2019, that were their previous policies, was that anyone who volunteered to be used as a human lab rat or a guinea pig, whichever you choose, for their trials for either a prescription drug or for a vaccination, which isn't a vaccination until it's licensed by the FDA as safe and effective, and there are case studies approved, which all take about 5 to 25 years. But by their emergency Authorization Act, they decide to bypass all that. But nevertheless, this particular FDA regulation stated that the person must be a willing volunteer and a sound mind, and examined to see if they qualify for the trial. And then also, they must be informed of what they are injecting or ingesting into their bodies, and they must also be informed of the direct adverse health effects or even possibility of death before they inject them or ingest any pills into their bodies, and they must have a signed consent form. But under the COVID-19 that was rolled out in 2019 and the jabs that were rolled out in 2021 under the United Nations Agenda 21, which is a depopulation program, they seem to have forgotten about the requirement when it comes to using human beings as a human lab rat. And instead, they use fear and coercion and threats to cause fear in the minds of their lab rats, their future lab rats, so that they would comply under duress and be jabbed under the fear that they were told they could die if they don't get jabbed, that they could remove their mask and that they would
be free of COVID. It was just going to be one jab, and they lied, and they didn't, and they kept calling them vaccines. They are not vaccines. They are experimental and trial injections of unknown Pfizer trade secret formulas, along with an mRNA genetically engineered organism that allegedly can alter the DNA and of God's unique DNA that he created for individuals. We don't even know what they injected into millions and millions of people's bodies and the consequences. They have the potential lists and lists and lists of potential direct side effects that the FDA, CDC, WHO, Dr. Fauci, and Big Pharma all knew about and did not disclose to the general public before they rolled out the experimental and trial jabs. So it goes on to say that Campbell and Duff say this, often too, the parents and siblings' rights to relief from seemingly pointless crushing burdens were important considerations. Here again, Duff and Campbell have enunciated a new right, and that is the parents and siblings are not to have burdens. Even Duff and Campbell use the word seemingly in reference to pointless, and I am sure that crushing as applied to the burden may not be nearly as crushing as when applied to the eventual guilt. And so this is part one on the future of our nation with eugenics being enacted in the United States of America, as well as what appears to be depopulation programs, indoctrination into the public schools of gender ID confusion and encouraging children to be involved in sexual preference classes under the guise of education at a very young age, robbing them of their innocence, and encouraging them into listening to indoctrination of same sex, which is a depopulation program, and that abortions are no big deal, which is a depopulation program, and being jabbed and wearing masks and cutting off their oxygen that the brain needs to function properly, especially when you're in school or at work or flying a plane or working on a patient and in surgery. I mean, so we need oxygen. It is vital to life. It is the breath of life. And God made a point of it in the Bible when he said he breathed life into Adam and Eve. And that was the fresh air and the oxygen, because without fresh air, oxygen, you cannot live. You die. So if there is a flu that causes respiratory problems, which all do, then why in the world would they order you to wear a mask, one, two, or three masks, and to cut off your oxygen supply that keeps your cells healthy, that keeps your lungs healthy, your brain, your heart, your entire body, and your immune system healthy? That is why God made with a nose and a mouth and didn't eliminate the nose and the mouth and didn't create us with a mask over our face. And nobody has a right to tell us to put a piece of clothing over our face. We are not living in the Middle East, and we are not living in communist China yet. So on that note, I'm just going to say, do your homework, do your research, come to your own conclusion. I hope you enjoy and learn from this book, Abortion and the Conscience of the Nation, and I will finish the book in part two soon. Remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. And they are happening not just to me, but to everyone around the world. So wake up and do your homework and your research and come to your own conclusions and share the information. This is a matter of life and death, and it is a matter of keeping our country sovereign and humanity's survival and the babies' survival, because without babies, we have no sovereign nations. And there's no reason to save a planet. So think about it. And remember, nothing said on Columba Chronicles is intended to be legal, medical, financial, or political advice, but a dissemination of information for educational and entertainment purposes only. And please go to Amazon.com, type in Obamasaurus, A-U-R-U-S, Obamasaurus by Roseanne Columba, and check out my latest book, Hot Off the Press, and it's all about a political satire, fictional characters, and a story on the redistribution of wealth and depopulation, or perhaps extinction. Check it out. You can read complimentary pages as well. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America and everyone around the world.
Rose Columbo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Columbo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Columbo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Columbo Chronicles.